Hello and welcome to the GVG Cast, episode 89. Happy Friday. I'm your host for this episode, Steve Bowling. Our good friend Ash Paulson is out partying his face off at MAGFest, so it's just me and my good pal and co-founder, Derek Bittner. How are you doing today, Derek?
Doing good, and I think Ash is even happier because he got snow at MAGFest, which means he is like the happiest boy in the world. I can imagine him just going out and doing snow angels all day rather than actually go to the show.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine Ash famously loves the cold. I'm snowed in to my house currently. Like, my car, there's too much snow. Like, my car can't make it.
We so, got nothing.
Wow, really?
It's cold and windy, but we got no snow. As much as I'd like a little bit to show off to Kai, but oh well.
Yeah, there is something special about seeing, like, kids seeing snow, especially really early on. I love the way my kids act when there's snow out there. Like, I saw my daughter, because we have a backyard cam, I saw her just running around outside. And I was like, you're wearing shorts and a t-shirt. Please put something on. But hey, she had fun. I'm happy for her. But before we dive into the episode, and just so you know, this is going to be much looser, like more conversational of an episode. We're just going to kind of chit chat about stuff, maybe throw some gaming news in here and there, some basic stuff. But before we jump into all of that, of course, we do have a sponsor for this episode. That is, if you've been watching, the Couch Kids, and they've got an ad for us. So we're going to go ahead and roll that now.
Where is Andrew? We were supposed to be shooting the commercial today.
I don't know, man. He's probably playing Kingdom Hearts or something.
Hey, guys, sorry I'm late. I was playing Kingdom Hearts.
Dude, Andrew, what are you wearing?
You told me to dress up.
Yeah, dress up like the thumbnails, dude. You know, blue shirt, green shirt.
Well, what am I supposed to do now? This is all day makeup.
Hey, fam. I'm Colton.
I'm Ari.
And I'm Count Andrew.
Andrew. I'm just regular Andrew.
And we are
The Couch Kids.
Every week, you can typically expect a podcast, a reel, and an occasional Let's Play.
On The Couch Kids, we share a similar mantra to our friends at Good Vibes Gaming.
Don't be a grouch. There's always room on the couch.
Except kind of right now, because Andrew's fat taking up half the space.
What?
Yeah, all dude. Right,
are you kidding me?
Find us on social media at Couch Kids Podcast and catch on the couch.
Colton, he's biting me!
Thank you so much to The Couch Kids for sponsoring this episode of GVG Cast. Your support means the world to us. Thank you again. In the world of supporters, we've also announced today that we are now partnered with Elgato. So you might notice that I maybe sound a bit different. I'm using one of their microphones now. I'm looking at you through one of their prompters, and I've always used a bunch of their other stuff. We're really thrilled to be partnered with Elgato. You're going to see a bunch of upgrades for the whole team coming in the next couple of weeks, hopefully, as stuff rolls out to everybody. I tested their stuff before we all signed this deal. That's why I have it now. But we'll all be getting some cool upgrades soon. So thanks to Elgato for sponsoring us. That means, you know, at least for this year, we're partnered with them and we'll be using their stuff exclusively. But man, it's been a week, hasn't it?
Yeah, it really has. I mean, even just with the Elgato thing, I'm thinking about it. Like, I was talking about it before we hit the show. I've had this mic since I've started. This is my mic that I've had the entirety I've been on YouTube, and it's like the actually changes feels weird. It's very, very, very odd. Of course, I've been using Elgato for capture devices since the beginning. That's just what's recommended, and always appreciated that. So yeah, looking forward to the upgrades. But yeah, as far as the week, oh boy, yeah, it's been a week, hasn't it?
yeah, it feels like news kind of flew by. I picked up a copy of another code today, and I haven't even tried it. I haven't started it yet.
I mean, I know better. Like, I'd love to play Prince of Persia. I don't have time for that. I'd love to play another code. I don't have time for that. I'm just working on other things on the side. And, you know, as many of you know, I took NSO Game Club from, you know, just to help with our analytics on the show, channel itself, which seems to be working because John's recent videos and even my backlog video continues to do quite well. And so it's, you know, sucks that I have it on there, but it's not gone for good. It is on our Patreon. Is it a Patreon exclusive service? And you were on an episode there, Steve. You got to play Wario Land 3 for the first time.
Yeah, and I was gutted because as much as I had fun experiencing a new game, I proclaimed that when you had Phantasy Star 4, I wanted to be on. And of course, you literally rolled it at the very next opportunity. But I am glad that you got to experience Phantasy Star 4 finally, because it is a god tier game, in my opinion.
You'll be excited to see that. You're excited to know that that is now my top game on NSO.
Nice, nice. Yeah. It deserves that spot. It is such it's like an all-time classic. It truly is. And because it was trapped on the Sega Genesis, which at that point was like in a very distant second place, it's just unfortunate that so many people didn't get an opportunity to play it back when it was new.
I know it finishes the whole story, but my God, if they could just do a remake or something with Phantasy Star, get single player player Phantasy Star out there, man, that'd be absolutely wild. Wonderful.
In a world where we're getting remakes and remasters seemingly left and right, it's so weird that Sega has not touched the single player iteration of Phantasy Star. It's just baffling to me that we don't have that.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it. I see Roskyard mentioning the infuriating encounter rate. I honestly didn't. I've played worse. That encounter rate did not bother me in the slightest.
Yeah,
I gotta say,
I agree with that 100%. I think that it's pretty chill in terms of how often you get random encounters on the map. I think some people who have come up in later generations of gaming may have differing opinions, because obviously that is something that modern RPGs tend to give you a bit more control over, is how often you bump into those enemies. But I really like it. I think that it's a pretty well-balanced RPG. Now, that being said, I know you said you didn't have time for Prince of Persia, but I just have to gush about that game for a minute.
Go for it, because I've been, trust me, I've been salivating. I'm hearing comparisons to Metroid Dread, and I'm like,
yes.
Oh, don't do this to me.
So one thing I love about Prince of Persia, it does control very similarly to Dread in terms of just the mechanics and the weightiness of the character. You play as a guy named Sargon. You're finding wing or feathers of the Simurgh, and every time you find a feather, it grants you a new time-based ability. Although they kind of play with the concept of time really loosely. Like, a double jump is considered a time-based ability. I'm like, really though? But probably my favorite mechanic in that game is that you have the Metroid Dread parry. However, every enemy has a parryable attack that like goes into an instant kill cutscene. So like, I had this very Gerudo-esque looking enemy. She jumped at me with like a scimitar in her hand and came down for the swing, and I parried it with like perfect timing. And Sargon jumps up and like knees her in the chin, and then he follows her down and just stabs his swords through her to end her. And I was like, that is so cool. And every grunt level enemy has a unique animation like that. And then, of course, every boss also gives you opportunities to do really cinematic parries. It's anime as hell. Like, there's this one ability you can learn. There's a meter that you can charge by killing enemies and successfully parrying attacks. That you fill up, it's your Ashura gauge. And when your Ashura gauge is full, you can do these things they call Ashura bursts. And they're basically like Dragon Ball moves, man. Like, there's one where you do, it's like a level 3, and you just go in to a stance waiting to counter an attack. And when an enemy hits you, you do like a bunch of rapid fire punches. And then you essentially just do like a Kamehameha on the guy and wipe him out. Like, it is so cool. It's an awesome game. There's tons of really stiff platforming challenges. You feel like a badass when you're playing it, and I think that's probably the highest praise I can give to it. I didn't think that it would come anywhere close to the level of Metroid Dread, but the more I played it, the less I was able to put it down, and I finished it last night. It's just absolutely worth your time. Like, it's worth setting aside a little bit of time to try out. I think there's a demo out for every platform.
Yeah, I've heard there's a demo out. I need to check it out. I want to check it out at some point. There's also a demo for Grand Blue Fantasy Relink, which just looks gorgeous. So there's a lot of cool demos coming out for a lot of the recent games, but I'm sticking to my vow that the first game I'm going to buy this year is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. That is my most anticipated game of 2024.
It's me just clearing out backlog and playing as much as I can up until the point of Rebirth releasing. I'm sticking to that and having that way. I hate to mention this on the show, but I've seen a lot of people talking about it, where unfortunately our lovely live audience is being cut off slightly. Apparently only the left side of their messages.
Oh no.
I'm not sure if that's something you can fix.
I can. Give me just a sec.
Okay. While you talk about that, I got heaven knows you have only so much time on your hands, Steve, and there's so many games to play. But on my personal streams, Amy and I have been playing through the campaign of Final Fantasy XIV Shadowbringers. And I don't know if you've heard or not, but people really like Shadowbringers as an expansion. Yeah. Holy crap.
I saw your tweet about this. I saw you mention that it was you got to the bit that supposedly makes a lot of folks misty-eyed.
Yes. And I got misty-eyed. I got misty-eyed. It was like the thing is, on its own, like if you just went into the expansion and experienced it, you know, it's fine. It's good. It's fine. But as a culmination of everything of Final Fantasy XIV up until that point, it is incredible. Just pays off. So many things have been setting up and has that just think of it like a really good season four, where the first three seasons feel like, oh, okay, these elements are here. And then all of a sudden season four is like, bam, this thing is now important. And bam, here's the explanation for this thing. That idea. And there's still a bit more to play, but I've beaten the main portion of the expansion and hoping to finish up Endwalker before Dawn Trail comes out. So
you're catching up pretty quick. I feel like and obviously you're doing it for streams, which is a really important thing to note, like, because I think one thing people outside of the games industry have trouble kind of processing is that you almost need a reason to play a game when you're in the industry, because if you're not playing it for like content or a review or a guide, where the hell is the rest of the time to play something? And it just so happens that it dovetails nicely. Unlike most jobs, fortunately, it's like a hobby that I don't think I've ever met somebody in the industry that didn't like playing games who played them just for money. It's fortunate in that we, you know, most of us truly enjoy doing that, but it's also simultaneously true that people who aren't in the industry play way more than people who are, because they just play when they want to and they have like unlimited time. Like I always liken it to, imagine if you really liked books, but you had to write a book report about every single book you ever read.
Yeah. That's just, ain't that the truth? I find Twitch streaming very useful in a ways of just actually playing other games. They're usually not recent games, but at least I can experience them and, you know, catch up on backlogs and see more, basically.
I was going to say, in a way, that's kind of freeing, though. Like, because right now, if I wanted to, you know, my free time is usually with my kids or I'm working on something. And I have trouble justifying playing like an older game, like something that nobody's talking about right now, because then I'm like, oh, well, that could be time spent playing a game to eventually make a video on versus, you know, just playing for the enjoyment of it, which is a really weird thing to have to balance. But kudos to you. I wish I had the energy to also Twitch stream. It's just one of those things, like I'd love to do it, but I have a lot of difficulty finding the free time and the energy at the same time.
Yeah, I take it at it's always late at night, 9 o'clock my time until midnight. So yeah, that's the only time, and only just a little bit each time. But you know, it's a nice way to get a bit more gaming in there. But there's still other stuff. Like I would like to finish Final Fantasy 16 before 7 Rebirth comes out.
I think that one is staring me down in my backlog, which, if you haven't watched Derek's video on how to tackle your backlog, that's a great video, and one that I identify with thoroughly at this exact moment.
I'm happy with myself, though, because last year it'd be like, I'd be really like, oh, why am I not playing Prince of Persia? Oh, I'm missing out on all this other stuff. And I'm just like, no, I'm chill. I'm cool. I'll get to it when I get to it. It's all good. So yeah, the video was self-soothing for whatever reason.
I think it's kind of nice to talk about stuff like that, because I remember my very first article that I ever wrote anywhere. And it was in Kotaku's now defunct community blog, where I talked about games in one's backlog and what your strategy is for revisiting those games after you've spent time away. Like, do you just trash your save and start over, or do you try to reignite that playthrough and finish it? I've learned in years past now that I just basically torch the save, because I've restarted Persona 5 like 6 times now. But someday, I keep saying I'm going to beat it. I did want to take your temperature on something. Okay. I'm now at a phase where when I think about replaying a Switch game specifically, I'm like, no, I'm not going to do it, because I have this feeling that the Switch 2 will play them better. And I'm like, and then I'll want to play them again. So I'm wasting that energy on replaying anything old on the Switch. Have you, are you still playing old games like on the Switch, or are you skipping them right now?
Oh no, I'm still playing old games on the Switch. I don't have that thought. Like let's take Last of Us Part 2, for example, because it just got that remaster. Right. And if I had, let's say, gotten Last of Us on PS4 right before the remaster came out, I wonder, like, okay, I experienced the story. Granted, it might look a little bit better, but I'm not, like, hurting for anything. You know, I don't feel like I missed out in any real way. I feel like, unless it's a significant upgrade or has, like, a unique aspect to it, I don't feel that pull to try to, you know, like, oh, I want to beat this again because I want to see all the new stuff. I'm good.
Yeah, that's fair. I obviously, Sony sent me a code for that. Thank you. And I promise I'll get a video out next week. I lost all of my damn footage. Yeah, it hurt. But I think that there is some benefit in that. I just want to really quickly, since we use that as an example, I agree with you 100%. Like, if you had just played The Last of Us Part 2, I don't know that Remastered has a lot to offer you. But I will say, as somebody who really likes the process of making games and who likes to see behind the curtain, particularly like the lost levels they included to me were really cool and worth that like $10 upgrade by themselves. I mean, there's the roguelike mode, which I like. But for me, The Last of Us has always been a story driven experience, and there's no story in a roguelike mode, or at least they didn't follow the Valhalla blueprint and include story elements within it. You know, which is evident by the fact that it's very arcadey. You can choose your character. You can play as Joel. So there's a lot of stuff there that hints that there's no real story to be found within it. But that being said, it is a good time. It's fun. For me, the value proposition comes down to, if you've never played it, yeah, the extra $10 is a no-brainer. If you played it and you loved it, maybe the extra features are worth it. But I definitely don't think, if you just beat it on PS4, that there's any reason to go out and buy that upgrade immediately if your experience is fresh. Mine is admittedly 3 years old, but I will say I didn't go back to the story. I just played the extra stuff because I was like, I still remember the story. It's extremely fresh in my mind from the last,
yeah, you know, and there's no significant change to how it plays. So it's just like, yeah, it's still the same story and gameplay that you encountered the first time.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like I haven't done a side by side. I see Cutie Caitlin. Happy birthday, by the way. And happy birthday, Mom. I didn't even mention that. It's my mom's birthday today, right now. I took her out for breakfast. Don't worry, I'm not podcasting at the expense of celebrating my mom's birthday. But yeah, it's I looked at it and I haven't done a direct comparison, but I was like, I can tell that it looks better, but I couldn't quantify how much. I'm like, oh, this is nicer, but not by such an extreme amount that I'm like, oh, look at these details. Look at these textural differences. It looks better. But
We've gotten to a point where it's a little harder to see that upgrade. It's not like going, I mean, the crazy thing to me as far as visual upgrades is Resident Evil, the original, because you got Resident Evil on PlayStation 1, and then one generation later, Resident Evil on GameCube. What a massive difference.
Yeah, that to me is where you really see this stuff. And I get that. I mean, I understand all the motivations for releasing a new PS5 version of The Last of Us Part 2, especially when you're already talking about Season 2 of The Last of Us, which will follow the story of the game. I'm sure there was incentive to have something on the current gen of hardware so that people who are strictly fans of the show might just go out and be like, oh, they got a game based on the show. I'll buy that. But yeah, I think that I'm more excited to see Naughty Dog do something brand new at this point. I really want a brand new game from them, whether that's The Last of Us Part 3, which I think would be cool. And I can say this. I was at there's no way for me to say this without sounding like a complete douchebag. So I just apologize ahead of time. I was at a party with Neil Druckmann and we talked about this, and I obviously, and this is not him confirming a game, let's be real clear, but he did say that he feels that there is more to Ellie's story beyond what we experienced in The Last of Us Part 2. Whether that means it'll happen in the show, which he was working on at the time, or whether it means he will make a game, I don't know. But I did hear that from the man himself. I'm sure we'll see it in some medium at some
point. Honestly, I'd prefer they just keep it to the show. Let Naughty Dog do something else, because honestly, it feels like they've been kind of treading water for a long time now. And meanwhile, Insomniac is kind of flourishing, just all kinds of interesting games coming out of them.
And yeah, that's true.
It's just been a Last of Us machine for the last, I've lost track of years.
Yeah, I think one of the big things is that Naughty Dog, like you said, I think they're becoming Bungie. In that, you know, Bungie was like, they made Halo. And then, of course, Microsoft was like, more of that, until they got so sick of it that they, you know, bought their independence. And then Sony bought them and they're like, more Destiny. And they're just, and now they're the Destiny machine. So I think those developers need an opportunity to spread their creative wings, so to speak. I think that Naughty Dog could do some really cool stuff. They have in the past before The Last of Us. Mm-hmm. So it'd be really nice to see something that kind of breaks the current mold that they're in. But then also it's hard to say, because obviously at the end of the day, like, Sony's going to be like, well, this makes us a lot of money and we want you.
I mean, they're changing their entire, like, that's why they get rid of their AA studios, just because of, look how well Last of Us is doing. Look how well God of War is doing. We want more of that.
Yeah. I mean, even Horizon, which, I mean, I will say I didn't know much about it, but the Insomniac leak to a certain degree has been unavoidable. And a big thing that, you know, whether you were looking for it or not, was the sales figures. People everywhere shared those sales figures. And I have to say, I'm very surprised both, one, by how well Sony's first party games do, broadly speaking, and two, that Nintendo actually does way better than I thought in comparison. I thought that was a really interesting comparison point, because I always thought Nintendo's first party stuff, while well loved, did not sell super great by comparison to Sony in particular.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense, because we see those sales reports from Nintendo and we get the lineup of, like, this is how many games they've sold. And, you know, Mario Kart's always at the top of that sort of thing. But you hear the, like, sort of when the games first come out, like, it's like, we've sold the most copies in a week ever for this game. And it just makes it seem like it's just doing that much better.
Yep. There's never a point of reference there, which I find interesting, other than, you know, previous games. But like you said, you know, if you're coming off the Wii U, it's like, well, how good is good for you guys right now? You know?
Right. And it's all about the, like, you know, I'm still watch Max do it on occasion. And it's the comparison point between Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter,
right?
Where Mortal Kombat is, you know, will always do well. It's just in this upper echelon of fighting games where it just hits that right casual market. And Street Fighter is, you know, has that legacy, but the games never sell like huge numbers in the same way as Mortal Kombat, to the point where Street Fighter 6 is closing in to become the best selling Street Fighter in maybe since 2.
Yeah.
Which is saying something. Cause 2 was a phenomenon. And, it's like, but you look at those numbers, it's like, yes, it's about to become a phenomenon. It's doing huge numbers. And you look at those numbers and it's like 2 million or 2.5 million. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
Sure, that's big.
It's funny how strong marketing is for some of this stuff, because if you had asked me before Max Dude put out that tweet, I would have been like, oh, well, Street Fighter outsells Mortal Kombat all day. I just kind of assumed that based on really nothing when I think about it logically, but it was the popularity that I perceived of the franchise in the 90s just carrying out forever. Because, you know, if you were around in the arcade era, there was always a massive crowd around every Street Fighter cabinet. And you had people who played Mortal Kombat, but I think Mortal Kombat really grew in the home console scene more than in the arcades. And that that to me, I guess you don't have eyes on that. And so I never, even with MK1, I never would have imagined that it was trouncing Street Fighter VI. I love both games. I personally prefer Street Fighter VI, but
I've heard that from most, that it's Mortal Kombat 1 is might be the first Mortal Kombat in a while to not sell as much as previous entries.
Really?
Yeah, I think I at least according to the latest video I watched, it seems to be kind of not struggling, but it's just that there's just a general sense there's like, there's not much for us here.
They've had some aggressive monetization in that game that I could see turning people mm-hmm. off. But
yeah,
I actually really enjoy the game. I think it's fun.
And most people agree. If you're into it, it's fun, but it may not be the most fun game to watch as far as like pro matches, like, because it's very much like, okay, here's the characters, here's what you do. And Street Fighter still has that crazy defense mechanics that sort of change it up and can really make individual matches pretty interesting, despite the fact they've not done a single update as far as changing up the mechanics and buffs or debuffs or however you want to do it for each of the characters.
Yeah, it is really weird that we don't get, I mean, I guess I didn't realize they weren't doing balance patches, but yeah, it's
I think they're waiting until after the first DLC season.
Oh, that makes sense. Man, that first DLC season is long, too. It's taken a while. Let me read out a couple super chats because one of them gives me a perfect layup, I'm going to be honest. So,
okay.
We've got $5 from Disney Duncan, who writes, there's a rumor that we might get a Deadpool 3 teaser at the Super Bowl. Hope it's true. I could see that happening. Super Bowl's
it makes sense.
Something like that. Yeah.
Perfect place.
And our next one, and I think it's the only next one for now, from Fangs the Wolf with $3 says, go get 100 copies of Starfield. And thank you. That's the layup I was referring to. So a rumor popped up. And this actually, it's out there on Twitter. It's from a Walmart point of sale system indicating that in just a handful of days, in 3 days, so this Sunday, the 21st of January, Walmart is to return all physical copies of Starfield to Microsoft. That Microsoft is essentially buying back their physical stock of first-party games from retailers. And that this Starfield note is just one of many that is like as part of a global recall of physical software. And normally I would wag my finger at that and be like, that's probably fake. That doesn't make sense. They've sold a lot of consoles with, you know, disc drives on them. The Series X doesn't have an all digital version. Of course, there's the Series S, which is all digital. But what really lends credence to this rumor is the fact that within Microsoft's own court filings, they kind of outed themselves for working on an all digital Series X that's supposed to come in like May, according to their own internal roadmap. And this spells out more largely the idea that Microsoft might be backing away from physical media. And this also comes on the heels of the news that Best Buy recently got rid of all their physical movies. So I gotta ask, Derek, because I think you're more of a collector than most of us on the channel. How does this sit with you?
Oh, it sucks. I mean, the only thing that saves me, I'd be really upset if I was more of an Xbox fan because I've never really played a ton of Xbox, mostly at my friends, but I've never felt the need to buy it myself. But if, let's say Sony was doing the same thing or Nintendo was doing the same thing, I'd be crushed because physical helps so much, especially in terms of the Switch, because and especially if you have kids, because if you're going digital, you have to share accounts or you have to get the game how many times in order for everybody to comfortably play the same game. It's one of those things of sharing it, but companies like going digital because they don't have to put out physical products. They don't have to spend the money on that. It's just like, here's a code. There you go. Buy it digitally. There it is. And hey, if we decide later that we don't want you to have that game, we can take it away. That's what, because the sort of doing Sony did that with their, like, with what movies, right?
Discovery TV shows. So anything owned by Discovery got removed from Sony's platforms. And it was basically like, if you bought it, sorry, it's gone now. And they didn't offer any type of refund, no compensation for people that had these shows like in their libraries. It was just, hey, we know you bought these, but suck it, you're done. Like, well, you can't have these. Which to me was probably the scariest thing of it, because I hate the idea. I mean, I'll be honest, you know, most of my games come from publishers or developers. I get codes, but I also buy a lot of digital because particularly on the Switch, it is easier for me. If it's a game that's just for me, it's easier for me to just have that. Like if I'm going to go on a plane trip, I no longer have to be like, what games do I want to bring? They're just there.
Yeah.
But I agree with your point 100%. I'm a father to two kids, and a lot of first party Nintendo stuff, they want to play that. They look at me playing Pikmin 4, Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom, Super Mario, you know, they want to play those games. And so I normally, for those first party big release titles, I get them physical because at some point when I'm done with it, my kid is going to take the game card off me and they're going to play through it. And I mean, that alone saves me $60, sometimes $70. You know, that is a big deal. And I think that what folks don't realize is in this all digital future, it gets way cheaper for the companies and way more expensive for us because now they're going to say like, oh, well, building sharing is hard and we can't let you share your digital games.
Yeah. And the other thing is like for whatever reason, I always wondered why they never did this. I guess they never felt the need to you have a physical copy and have a digital copy. Wouldn't you want to try to push people towards digital by making it like $10 cheaper?
Right.
And they've never done that. It's you're getting no benefit from going digital other than not having to physically put in that disc. And it works out even on PlayStation because nowadays you put in the disc and it still has to install the damn game. It sucks, but physical ownership is meaning less, at least on PlayStation and Xbox. I mean, one of the things I asked for Christmas was a 2 terabyte SDD for my PS5 because I had no room. And it's one of those things where you need that room for just the save data. It's like a PC anymore. But still, the fact that our oldest is interested in my PS4 games now, and he can look through my collection and be like, okay, I want that one. Okay, here's the disc. Yes, I still have to install it, but I can still give it to him rather than have to fiddle around with digital, like, you know, like, oh, here's my account so you can play it too. And then I have to, like, if I want to play and at the same time as him, or if I'm working on something, we can't do that because we share the account.
Yeah. I wonder where this is going, particularly in the case of Microsoft, because we're talking about a future in which, you know, if digital is the only thing that we have access to, I mean, how does Microsoft reconcile this issue? Like, families often share their games. And I don't think consumers are quite happy or prepared for not having the option whatsoever to go out and get a physical game. Because obviously, once you eliminate used game sales and you eliminate the ability to just loan games to friends, trade games with people, you now control the price. You have a singular focal point for how to buy these games.
There's that. And also, like, there's something special against for physical, because let's take, you know, we have birthdays, we have Christmas. What is more exciting, to open up a gift where you have, you know, a physical game in there? Like, oh my God, it's this. I got this game. Holy crap. Thank you so much. And it's satisfying for the gift giver as well. Instead, it's essentially a gift card. Here, have a gift card, go buy the game you want, whatever.
Yeah, I will say, and maybe it is my...
Especially for older folks who don't know this stuff, so...
Yep, I was going to say, I know as a kid growing up, my mom would often go to Toys R Us, and she would just, like... I mean, I love my mom. I'm not trying to indict my mom. Happy birthday, Mom. I'm going to say something that may make you look bad. I know that she didn't have the mental bandwidth to absorb all the yammering that came out of my 6 or 7 year old mouth, right? I'd be like, Mom, this is the game I want. She'd be like, yep, okay, sure, huh? Yeah. And then she'd go to the Toys R Us, you know, around my birthday and be like, listen, I don't know what the kid wanted. What do the kids want? Like, what do I buy this little idiot? And, you know, they would make a suggestion and she would just buy a boxed game and bring it home. And I mean, whoever she consulted was always right. but
that's good.
You know, my point is, having worked retail as an adult and having run into parents, I totally get that parents are like not well educated on what their kids want to play. And they will oftentimes rely on a salesperson, be like, look, I know my kid wants whatever the cool hot game is right now. What the hell is it? And you can't do that on an eShop, or you can't go to Amazon and have somebody tell you like, oh, kids are clamoring for this right now. You know, it's just like an algorithm's going to be like, I know you're into shower heads and home improvement stuff. I don't know anything about what your kids like in video games.
Here's House Flipper.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Yeah, it's one of those things. Like my mom got around that problem being like, okay, just make me a list. what do you want? I'll pick from the list. Order the games in those sort of like how much you want them. Which one do you want most? I'll mostly follow that, but just make me a list so I can keep track and make sure you get what you want.
That's a good approach. I mean, and it's going to be something that we're going to have to do more. One thing that I find interesting, and I like this point made by Woogie Boo Bofuff 138. I killed that. I thought it said Woogie Boo Beautiful, but I started to realize as I was reading it. Anyway, they say games going digital only is just going to increase piracy. Piracy is justified for digital only games. I don't necessarily agree with the second statement.
Piracy is... I'm not going to say okay, but games that are not readily available that are on older systems, like they're not re-releasing such and such, or this is having issues. Okay, then that's fine.
Yeah,
and you have a little bit more of a leg to stand on.
I will say I 100% agree that piracy is going to shoot up in an all digital future because people are going to have access directly to the files.
It's been proven what kills piracy: easy access.
Yep.
To the games officially, or to anything officially. Piracy went down when all of a sudden all these old movies and stuff were available streaming. The release streaming originally through Netflix and having it all in one place killed piracy.
Yep.
But companies wanted more of the money, so that's why it all ended up in that way. And Nariak here saying, just look it up, and there's data that 60% of Sony game sales are physical overall. Some games are over 80%. I don't think physical is dying as fast as publishers want you to believe. Well, I think it's not. I don't know if Sony's going to go down this path. I have a feeling Sony's going to stay physical for a while. I think it's mostly Xbox, because there is another aspect of this that helps bolster them. Well, if there's no physical games out there, we want you buying digital. Boy, there certainly is a good service that we have that you might want to take advantage of if we want to do, Netflix and all that of games. Boy, you could buy the $60 for this game, or you could get this subscription and get Game Pass and have all the games.
Yep.
I push those subscriptions up.
I firmly believe that Microsoft is engaging in moves that feel extremely anti-consumer in order to bolster their Game Pass revenue. I would be curious to see what sales data exists for current like Series X first party software and how that compares to Game Pass subs. Because I know personally, as a Game Pass subscriber, I don't buy Xbox first party games anymore, because I'm like, day and date on this subscription I've already paid for, fine. It's the cost of two games a year and I get everything, every single thing they release, good, bad, otherwise. And those, unlike other games, those never rotate off. So I'm like, all of Microsoft's first party efforts and that stable continues to grow. Now Diablo 4 should technically be on there at some point. Call of Duty will be on there. We already know that. I mean, that I'm not a fan of either of those, but Call of Duty is huge, and having a sub to Call of Duty, especially if they go back to annual releases, that alone could be massive for Microsoft. So it's really difficult to say, but I agree, Derek, it feels 100% like they're doing this. Now, I don't know how this impacts their console business, though, because I don't know that I would be nearly as enthused about a new generation of hardware where I can't buy physical games for it. Part of the magic of getting a new console is getting as much as I can afford of that launch slate of games and bringing them home with me, and then just kind of hyping out over all this new stuff that I grabbed.
Yeah, so I understand that. There's something special about it. It's like you're checking out this new system and like, here's the games, and you're marveling over every little thing. And I don't know if that's going to be a thing here, but I, like, yeah. I said, I've never really gravitated towards Xbox. Their exclusives never quite did it for me. And I think it's just built into me now. It's just like, yeah, I mean, they have good games. I completely understand. I completely get that, but I can hold off.
Yeah, that's fair. Definitely. I mean, and to be fair, I don't think that this is a symptom. Like, I don't think that Microsoft is blazing a trail, like you mentioned, for Nintendo and Sony to follow here. I think this is going to prove historically to be a big misstep.
Yeah, because, well, look at the streaming wars on just for movies. Like, all these companies saw Netflix making tons of money, and they're like, oh, Amazon Prime, we're going to take our stuff from Netflix and do our own streaming service. Disney, we're going to take our stuff and make our own streaming service. And Paramount and Hulu, and just all of it, trying to do their own thing. And instead, all of them are struggling. Nobody's making money off the streaming services because, well, there's too many options now. You're not all funneled into one thing that everybody wants to get. You took your stuff home and not everybody wants to go play at your house.
Yeah.
Disney will probably be fine because it's Disney, but other ones are struggling, obviously.
I agree with that 100%. It's really interesting to see what is going on there because, sorry, one of my apps just started freaking out on me and it was flashing in my face while we were talking. One of the things that I find really interesting about all of this is that, like you mentioned, you know, everybody wanted a cut of the pie for streaming, and streaming was originally a way to get away from cable and like all the crazy packages where you had to have like 98 channels to get everything. And now we're just back there again. It's just all online now.
Yeah, the only difference is you still don't have to be like, oh, I have to watch this channel at 8 o'clock if I'm going to watch the new episode of this thing.
Yeah, you can watch it whenever you want, but you have to have 19 subscriptions to watch it.
So. Yep. Yeah. That's why my friends and I all like, we have a list of like, all right, I'm getting this, you're getting this, you're getting this. So let's share our passwords and we can like, we pay for one, but we have access to most.
Yeah. Yeah. That's about how I do it too. Me and my buddy, Nick, we have them split down the middle on streaming services. So I've got half, he's got half, and we just share the logins. Like my dad came to, go ahead.
Oh no, I was going to mention Toonjay here. Like we're not back there. You're not forced to buy all of them. That is the big difference. You're not limited to packages. Cause you were like, there were like channel packages and whatnot for old cable. That, so it's not exactly the same, but
yeah. Yeah. What I meant more kind of the vibe of like, you know, you have all these different endpoints that you have to have in order to watch what you want. Mm-hmm. Where we were getting awfully close to like the ideal of just having one streaming service that we could all subscribe to that had every single thing we wanted to watch. And now we're splintered. And it feels like they're trying to replicate that in gaming, which is funny because nobody likes it. Like nobody wants that. I don't use, you know, as much as I like Prince of Persia, I don't want to subscribe to Ubisoft Plus. And they just had that really bad public take about like gamers should get used to not owning their games. I was like, should they though?
Should they? Yeah, exactly. It's like, that's, you know, I kind of want to own the things I buy, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I want to have ownership over the things that I've paid you money for. And I understand that, you know, in digital games, even without a sub, you still technically like in the legal sense, don't own them. But I also think that every publisher right now out there knows that were they to actually use that term from their EULA, like that'd be it for them. Their digital marketplace would be gone overnight. Nobody would continue to buy stuff if the publisher's official stance was, yeah, we could just take it away whenever and there's nothing you could do about it. Please continue to give us your money.
Honestly, as this becomes more prevalent, it might push people to buy physical more often just because, well, at least they own it. At least they have it. You might not be able to get all the updates or anything for it because of God knows what happens, but at least you have the core game and you can play it to some degree.
Yeah, I agree with that. Neriak in our YouTube chat to lighten the mood a little bit says, I hope Hi-Fi Rush is on other systems with a physical on other systems. Well, we already know it's coming. And because the Australian ratings and classification board rated it. So we know that it's coming to both Switch and PS4 as well as Xbox One, I believe. Like they ported it back to the last gen. So yeah, it's coming. I don't know about physical, especially with this move from Microsoft. I kind of doubt it, to be honest.
Yeah, unlikely, but it also ties into our, you know, what we have on our thumbnail for this time with Indiana Jones. So we already know that, Senua's saga is not going to be physical. They've already confirmed that. And it's weird to think you got this huge property in Indiana Jones, or at least, you know, somewhat huge, you know, it's well known at least. And you're not putting out a physical version so that the old dads, you know, like 40-year-old dads see it on the shelf and be like, Indiana, that looks cool. I want to get that.
Yeah. As a 40-year-old dad, I want a physical copy of that. I saw the logo and I was like, oh, this tickles the nostalgia center of my brain. I like this. I mean, we can whip and punch Nazis. The Harrison Ford model is remarkable. And from what I can hear, I had to have my audio turned way down for the stream, but I heard that Troy Baker does a pretty good performance as Indiana Jones.
I listened to it, and it's when you know it's him, you can tell, but if you don't know that going in, it's like, oh wow, that is a very close Harrison Ford. Honestly, I was honestly more impressed by the guy they got to play as Marcus, because he sounds exact.
Oh, nice. I need to go back and listen to the trailer. I watched the trailer. I was like, this is really cool, but yeah, I couldn't really hear it. So I'll have to give it a shot. I don't know if I like the name The Great Circle. I'm sure within context, it'll make more sense, but
yeah, it probably will, but it's not a great title.
It's not gripping. Like, that's for sure.
Yeah. Like I've not seen Dial of Destiny, but Dial of Destiny is a pretty good title.
Ooh, that is a good title.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've got to check it out, but I will be checking Indie out. But I think that this is not going to be a physical game. I think this is Microsoft saying, like, we're getting out of physical games, we're going to this all digital future, which, to be fair, they were pushing for that at the beginning of the Xbox One generation, which exploded in their faces spectacularly. And I'll be real, I think this is going to as well. I hate to say it, because I feel badly for the folks at Xbox, because it feels like they're just making wrong decision after wrong decision this generation, and they're like doubling down on all of them. So I'm hopeful that whatever generation comes after this, that they manage to pull themselves back together.
I don't know. We were hoping for, like, it's definitely a turnaround from the Xbox One era, but it just seems like they've, as you said, basically ever since the Xbox One, it's just gone downhill for them. They had that big initial mistake. It backfired on them immediately. And now there's just a slow backfire, as you put it. It's just like creeping up on them. But they're also like stuck where they're not selling as well as Sony or Switch. And they don't have the exclusives that people are really jonesing for. Not in any major way, really. There's some out there, but not in the same way as others. And people have just chosen Sony this generation, so they're still struggling. They just don't have that foothold like they did in the 360 era.
I agree with that 100%. It feels like Sony has just kind of outmaneuvered them at every turn. People are voting with their wallets for a more traditional console concept, and Microsoft continues to push for something new, and maybe the market's just not ready. I don't know. I mean, personally, I'm kind of taking a wait and see approach. I've been waiting and seeing for 3 years now, but I really hope that Microsoft turns it around. I think the game industry is better with more people competing in it, but yeah. And to be clear, yeah, folks, there were rumors of Game Pass on Nintendo. I think Phil Spencer himself ruled that out a while back, like basically said Nintendo wouldn't want it. But all right, let's do a couple more super chats, then let's read our patron topics. If you don't know, you can become a patron over at patreon.com/gvgaming, where at the producer tier and above, you can submit topics for us to read out. We do these each and every episode of GVGcast, so 89 episodes and counting. And of course, there's a whole slew of other benefits. I won't read you the whole ad. We did an ad earlier in the show. Anyway, Disney Duncan with $5. If Deadpool 3 bombs, what happens to the MCU? Nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah, they've got more money than God. They'll be fine. That's like when the Wii U was going on, and like Nintendo's going out of business. I was like, have you ever read their balance sheet? There's no way they're going out of business.
And let's be honest. Deadpool is already very popular. You've got Hugh Jackman in the suit that everybody's wanted to see him in for years. It's going to do well.
Yeah, Deadpool 3 will be fine. I think that Disney super fans are probably a bit more worried than most, but yeah, I'm going to go watch it. So, and I haven't seen the last handful of Marvel films in the theater, but Deadpool to me is like a special one. I want to go see that in the theater because it makes me laugh. I like to go see funny movies.
Yeah.
But thank you, Disney Duncan, for the question and for the super chat. Following that up, we have $2 from Cam Alpha, who writes, Krillin from Dragon Ball versus Bumblebee from Transformers. That is Krillin all day.
Yeah, Krillin.
Like, anybody from Dragon Ball bodies anybody from Transformers without breaking a sweat. I'm pretty sure Chi-Chi could take out Bumblebee.
I think the only one that they might have issues with, at least some of them, would be Unicron.
Yeah. Yeah, some of them. But if you're talking like, I would say Krillin. I mean, he was, by the end of Z, he was definitely capable of taking down Frieza by himself. So I would say Frieza probably solos most, if not all, things in Transformers. Well, Z Frieza. Super Frieza, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's, but, whew. Yeah, there's a lot.
That's just a dangerous concept. All right. Well, let's go ahead and start off our patron topics with you, Derek.
Sure. My topic this week comes from Aramis Baramis, saying, as I get continuously ran over by 10% bright powder misses, 20% quick qual activations, 30% one hit KO moves, and countless double team spammers in the Gen 4 Battle Tower, Pokemon Gen 4 Battle Tower, I should mention, I gotta ask, what is the most annoying use of RNG in a video game? And, you know, I for those wondering, I've been tweeting about this a little bit, but I've not actually said what I'm working on. I am very close to the end, but it's a struggle, to say the least, if you're anywhere familiar with this game. The next game I'm doing a video on is Dragon Quest II. Finally fulfilling that thing I was doing last year with the Dragon Quest, the original Dragon Quest video. And let me tell you that... Some of the ways the RNG works in that game, especially when it comes to what enemies attack which character and how often, can just drive you mad. And I'm not even to the worst part yet, because I'm slowly getting ready for the final dungeon, where I know for a fact that the enemies use a insta-kill move. And there's not a good way to revive yourself yet. That's why I need to grind so I can actually do that. And I'm playing off the original NES version. It is rough, but I ended up tweeting out about me throwing my controller for the first time in decades. I don't do that, but I was going through a certain dungeon and I kept getting to this one floor where these enemies would come in, and usually it's not too bad. You take out one of them, you're good. But then they come in again, and there's four of them, and they decide to all gang up on a certain party member. Typically the party member that carries the one revive relief I have in my unit. But if the character holding it dies, they can't trade it off. They can't use it. So I'm dead. So I have to restart. Did that once, did that twice, did it a third time. And they always know which character had it. I had to put it on my tank and he still died because there were so many of them attacking. It was a brutal, brutal experience, but RNG worked with me one time and I got through it. But yeah, that is probably one of the roughest encounters I've had. I have a lot to say about that game. It's not all negative, but that is certainly one of the things I got to bring up.
Oh man, that is wild. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I'm done. Oh,
okay. My RNG experience is with Xenoblade Chronicles 2. And that is, so for those of you that don't know, I've mentioned it a few times here on various podcasts that we've done. But I worked with IGN to produce their wiki guide for Xenoblade Chronicles 2. So they gave me access to an early copy of the game. I played through the game. Wrote everything down, but obviously when you're doing a guide, you want to be as complete as possible. You want to find like everything, do everything. And I think I had a pretty good amount of time, like a month, and I kept trying to roll Cosmos, like from just getting her. So if you don't know, like there are blades you can get that's just strictly RNG. And I spent all my resources in that game trying to get her, you know, kept trying, and I just never ever got her. It took me forever. I still, like, years later, don't have her, and I'll occasionally like log in and grind and just try to get enough stuff to pull her, and I never do. And I don't know what the drop rate for Cosmos is, but it's got to be like absurd at this point. If there was like a cheat I could do to just get her, I would. And I hate doing stuff like that, but it was one of the most deeply frustrating experiences I've ever had gaming, just trying to get her, because I just remember like spending hours, literal hours of my time just playing the game, trying to get enough to pull another one, pulling another one. Oh, it's not her again. What the hell am I going to do? This is ridiculous. It almost put me off of what is otherwise one of the best Switch games ever made.
I think 2 is still might be my favorite Xeno game. I love 3, but trust me, they're all very close. But I understand why they want the gacha system. It makes each playthrough different. It makes that conversation you're having with other people being like, oh, I got this blade. Oh, I got this one. Well, what was your strategy? Let's do that. And it's just, you know, I understand why they did it. And there's no money involved, so it's fine in that way. But because there's no money involved, at a certain point, you should throw us a bone. When I found a legendary core, I was like, oh, this must guarantee me a good one. And like a rare blade that I actually don't have. And no, I got a normal freaking blade. I'm like, what the heck? What's the point of a legendary if you're not going to get a rare? Like if they had made legendaries even slightly more rare, but guaranteed a rare blade that you did not have, it would solve all the issues.
Yeah.
That way you'd eventually get her. That's all it needs.
That would make sense. It's just, man, I have major issues with how they engineered that whole thing. I agree. They could have done way better, but Xenoblade 2, I agree. I've played through 3, the story of 3. 2 was just way better for me. I connected with the characters more. All right. Anyway, we've got one more patron topic. Thank you for that one. Our next one comes from Dat Alpha Lion, who I seem to pick on a lot. Maybe he and I are just on the same wavelength. But he wrote, let me pull it up here. How many 3DS? Okay, there we go. How many 3DS models have you bought or received in total over your lifetime? And additionally, how many 3DS models do you currently own? As for me, I got 4 over the course of my lifetime. Don't count yourself out yet. I got an Aqua Blue launch model initial 3DS shortly after the system's first major price cut, a blue 3DS XL, a black new 3DS XL for my little brother, and finally a black and blue new 2DS XL for myself. As of now, we currently use just the latter two. Side note, I love my new 2DS XL simply because the design looks sexy and the micro SD card slot is much less of a pain in the butt to access. Well, for me, let me think. So this coincided with me getting my first like corporate 9-to-5. And if you're not there in life yet, you know, if you've never gone from like making nothing to like making comparatively a lot in a short period, there's this like breaking in period where you just have way too much money and you don't know what to do with it. And I was right there when the 3DS came out. I went from like working at Target to having like a well-paying job. And so I was like, I've got no kids, no girlfriend. My rent is like $600 a month. I'm buying everything. So I bought a Japanese 3DS from like this company called Toys and Joys. I would never recommend them, but they had it in stock and I bought it. Then when the American one came out, I bought a Launch American 3DS. I bought the 3DS XL right when that came out. I don't even remember which one. I don't have it anymore. And then I bought like every friggin' special edition that I could get my hands on. I got the Triforce one. I got the Majora's Mask one. I got the, 2D or I'm sorry, the new 3DS in both flavors, like American and Japanese again with the faceplates. And then I got a 2DS, and that was like, that was the only one that I didn't pay for. Nintendo actually like sent me that one. And I remember that being a really weird event because Nintendo flew me all the way to New York from Arizona to go see it. And I was just standing in a room looking at it behind a glass case. And I was like, all right, like, why am I here? Like they didn't let us touch it. They just flew us.
Was
out
that
to
the event where you, also previewed, Oasis and yes. Pikmin. I was at that event too.
That's right. Yeah. That was before I was with GX. Derek was there because it was New York. And
put you up in a good hotel for that event too is weird.
What a hotel. Like, that was the same hotel they put Out of Towners up in for the Switch event, and I had forgotten. Because I walked up and I was like admiring the whole thing. I was like, wow, this place is fancy. And they're like, oh, welcome back, Mr. Bowling. And I was like, what? I've been here? This place kicks ass. I was too excited about the Switch to even remember it. But
yeah,
that hotel was swanky. And like Doug Bowser was there. It just felt like such a weird coming out party for the 2DS. And then I think like a month later in the mail, they just sent me one. They're like, here's your console. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know what to do with this. It's just a 2D version of like the same 3DS we've been using forever, but thanks. I took pictures of it and posted them. I was like, it's a nice design. So I've had, the answer is entirely too many. And if you want to know how many I currently have, it's still like 5. I don't know why. I have a problem.
You do. Cause you still do it with your Switch. I know you've bought a ton of Switches.
Oh, I'm horrible. I'm horrible, man. I've got like 4 Switches now. I've got an absurd number of PS5s. I have 2 Xboxes. Like, I should be supervised. I've recently gotten into kids buying Game Boys. I'm on my 3rd one.
that's a nice looking classic GBA.
Oh, this thing's trashed. It's actually like in really, really bad shape.
Oh, really? Mine's all yellowed. So I saw it actually being pure white. So I'm like, oh, pretty good. As for me, my 3DSs, I have 5. I bought one.
Wait, who has the problem now?
So there's a reason for this. Like I said, I bought one. I didn't buy a 3DS until the XL version came out because I held off on it because I'm like, I don't know what I want. Nothing's really attracting me. But then I think it was Ocarina was coming out. I picked up a 3DS XL around that time when Ocarina of Time 3D came out. So I just got that one, played with that, and then started working for GX. So I needed a recording 3DS eventually. So I got hooked up with a recording 3DS and started using that. But then we were getting into the idea of like, we need to be first day on this stuff. So we need to be ready right off the bat. So, and the recording 3DSs, by the way, have to be the original 3DS because the person who modded them, and it's the best mod, it only worked with the original 3DS. So, you know, I've played a lot of games on a very small screen because of that. But yeah, so I got an American one, and then I got a European one, and then I got a Japanese one just to be able to show off games a little bit early because the 3DS was not region free. So that brought me up to 4. And then I got a review copy of Fire Emblem Fates, which included the, you know, complete edition where it came with all 3 campaigns on a single cartridge. And they also sent me the Fire Emblem Fates 3DS XL. Like the one that came, what was it called? The one that came with a little nub that you can use for a right analog stick.
Oh, that was the new 3DS XL.
The new 3DS XL. So yeah, I have a new 3DS XL that I've not really used a whole lot because I had to record. I couldn't use it because I'm recording the game. So I'm like, all right, well.
Hey, it's there good it is. To have so
I have 5, but I bought 1.
Nice. Yeah. I bought, with the exception of 1, all of mine. But all right, cool. Well, thank you, Dad Alpha Lion, for that question. I really just wanted an excuse to brag about my 3DSs. I love them. They're like my children. All right. We've got a few more super chats, and then that's going to wrap it up for us. We'll go to our post show. We have Disney Duncan with $5 more. Thank you so much. Who writes, who would you recast as Kang? I would go with Lawrence Fishburne. I think he could do a really good intimidating villain kind of act. Like Morpheus, but evil.
Yeah, I could see that. He's getting a bit up there, but I still think it'd be cool. Keith David.
Oh, that'd be a good one. Yeah.
Could always use more Keith David.
That's true. He also has a really good voice for that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thank you, Disney Duncan. We've got Fangs. What do you think of the recent Sonic 3 Shadow casting rumors? I actually am not familiar. I don't know what the rumor is.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Sonic 3 Shadow casting rumor. I cannot find. When I look it up, I'm sorry, Fangs. I don't find anything. I don't know that would point me to like, oh, yeah, that's the rumor. I see somebody saying Pedro Pascal, which would be really weird. but anyway, like, do feel free to elaborate if you have it. H Toast with $49 Mexican dollars. What are some games worth getting physically now? If you're talking about Xbox, Starfield, I think it'll go up in value quite a bit, especially being that it was essentially the last physical Xbox game. Other than that,
I don't know. I don't buy Xbox.
I play a lot of Xbox games, but I don't own many. I have them all on Game Pass. So I would argue like Halo Infinite, stuff like that, first party games.
Honestly, any game that you feel like you just really want to have physical and make sure you have at all times.
Yeah, I agree with that. Let's see. We have Raul Los Santana dos Santos with two Brazilian Real. Now that a lot of time has passed, how do you feel about Tears of the Kingdom? I still think it's excellent. It was my game of the year. It was everybody's game of the year.
Yeah, I still haven't finished it. I need to go back to it at some point. But yeah, even just a little bit I did, it was enough to convince me. And I haven't even apparently got to the best stuff yet. So yeah, still enjoy it.
Yeah. So yep, I'm waiting to play it on Switch too. I think it'll get a performance patch. I hope it does. Disney Duncan back with $5 more. I don't like the opening of Secret of Invasion, but I still liked the show. Anyone else seen it? I think you mean just Secret Invasion.
Yes. I've been out of the loop on MCU for a long time.
The opening killed me. I tried to watch it. I didn't get past the opening. Maybe I'll try again now that I know that it apparently picks up. Let's see. We've got,
apparently the casting rumor, by the way, is I guess Hayden Christensen is Shadow.
I could see that. I don't think that's bad.
I've not watched the Obi-Wan show, but apparently he was good in that. So,
all right. Well, hey, yeah, I'll have to watch it. I don't know.
But an interesting one.
He'd do fine. His voice could fit Shadow, I think.
Some actors that didn't start out too great became wonderful voice actors. People criticized Mark Hamill when he was in the original Star Wars trilogy. And guess what he became?
Now. The most iconic Joker ever. All right, let's see. Cam Alpha, $5. Which video game franchise would be a great fit for a Transformers crossover? Me, I would say either Mega Man or Twisted Metal. Huh, Mega Man would be an easy choice. Maybe
Armored Core.
Oh, that's a really good one. I'll say Mech Warrior just to keep the theme going. Those would both be good. Thank you, Cam Alpha. Let's go ahead and scroll on down. Let's see who's up next. Who's on first?
Quite a bit.
Y'all are very generous this evening. Thank you.
Yeah.
Rec BCQ with $5. Recently, I got the Xenoblade Chronicles 3 term symbol tattooed on my arm.
Oh,
hopefully
nice.
It doesn't work like it does in game. Yeah, hopefully not.
Just keep it all red.
Yeah, exactly. keep us updated. You know, please live. Anyway, thank you, Rec. Disney Duncan with $10. Because Tears of the Kingdom isn't getting DLC, do you think there'll be a deluxe version of the game for Switch 2 with new features like more shrines, story difficulty options, etc.? Nope.
I think that's not Nintendo's way.
An update insofar as it performs better, and that's going to be it.
Yeah.
I think Nintendo is already crunching, maybe not crunching, but working away on the next Zelda.
Yeah, they've probably moved on at this point, and who knows? They spent how long on there? I think that game is feature complete.
Yep, agreed. I think that Nintendo is quietly working on updates for their first party games for the next console, but I think it's just performance updates. Well, and spirits in Smash, I guess. But
why not?
Thank you, Disney Duncan, with $2. Will Combat Pack 2 still happen? I don't
probably.
See why not. I mean,
yeah.
Game is printing money. Well, maybe not printing money, but it's doing fine.
Well, just because it's not doing as well as the past ones, that doesn't mean it's not doing well. It's still like it's selling more than Street Fighter. So,
yep.
There'll be a combat pack too.
Lots of updates. So, let's see. Mushworks with Canadian $10. It's crazy how Nintendo's prepping for the future more, unlike Microsoft. Between Nintendo Pictures, their new development center, hiring more and making sure the eShop/NSO is here to stay, among others. Yeah, it is weird to think of Nintendo as being more forward-thinking than really anybody.
They strive that line between conservatism and pushing forward quite, like, shockingly well. Like, their war chest, like, they're here to stay for ages.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Mushworks, for that. Kyle Strop with $2. Speak of the Devil playing Xenoblade 2 Torna right now. Hell yeah, let's go.
Yeah. Always a good choice.
Let's see. Disney Duncan with $10. Combat Pack 1, as we know, ends in July, which Deadpool 3 releases. So what if he gets announced as the first character for Combat Pack 2 to promote the movie? Just imagine that.
Not going to happen.
Nope.
It's WB Games thing. WB, it's not going to happen.
DC means no Marvel. So I don't see a Marvel character making it into Mortal Kombat anytime soon. But thank you for the super chats, as always, Duncan. Storysmith with $4.99. You can't soft reset for Blade and Gacha and Xenoblade 2. You know, I don't know. I didn't try it.
You couldn't.
Well, there you go.
You couldn't. I think you can now because of cloud saves, but you know, there's more stuff you have to do.
Let's see. Disney Duncan back with $5. Did anyone got the Noah and Mio amiibos? Not me, unfortunately.
No, I didn't either. They're a bit pricey.
Yeah. Did you hear about the rumored Shadow spinoff that could be in development? I have not heard that, but I would believe it.
I mean, Knuckles is getting one, and Shadow's the most popular Sonic character, so yeah.
Yep, exactly. Makes sense. I think that is that's highly likely. Let's put it that way. Wouldn't be surprised if any of that happened. But of course, that brings us to the end of episode 89 of the GVG cast. As you know, we are fan funded. That means patreon.com/GVGaming is where you can find out how to support us. Obviously, your super chats are super appreciated as well. But there are a special group of folks who help us specifically to keep the lights on and keep this show running. Y'all know who you are, but just in case you forgot, your name's probably about to appear on screen. I have to give a special thank you to our producers. Without you guys, we wouldn't be able to do any of this. Y'all know that. We've been saying that for hundreds of podcasts now. But I do have to give an extra special shout out to our patrons at the executive producer tier and above. Of course, all of you, I hope you know who you are, and I hope you know how much we appreciate you. I'm definitely not stalling while I pull up the list of names. But those fine, wonderful, incredible folks include none other than Brandon Bovia, Cutie Caitlin, Fangs, Z Patty, Sky Blue Flames, Eastman 23, Adam O'Sullivan, Richard Herrera, Logan Daniel, The D-Pad, Blake, Joy Content, Angel Martinez, Vedron, Joshua Hunter, Benny Yao, Azran127, Black King, Joseph Rutkin, Geeky Griffin, Lucky Wonderfish, Wataniac, Top Dog 23100, Young Ben Kenobi, The Couch Kids, Andrew Medeiros, Darchi, Becca, Ikaro, Dark B Andy, Esax08, Michael McCaw, Matthew Wong, Goron Amber CPHT, Too Much Spaghetti, Bane400, Ascaron809, Reoner, Rain and Clouds, The Game Orb, Super Gamer Dude 101, Mercury, Ravelox, My Mom, Hi Mom, Happy Birthday Mom, Dark Steel 01, Jaden Uloa, Jaden Buck, I said Jason Uloa, Jaden Buck, sorry about that, Cystic Warrior 29, DJ Jersic, Super Dank Awesome Unicorn Guy, Derek, Colin, Blazestar 25, Twilord, Mumbling Yeti, Cameron Sharp, Keel, Brendan Hesse, Hustlebun, Noah Fitterer, Calvin Atkinson, Brainchild, The Entire State of Wisconsin, Jim Wakelin, Z Laker, Aramis Baramis, Kyle the Monarch, Dat Alpha Lion, Lord Metarex, Blaze Collard, Eric, Kit, Cat Eevee Person 5, Peyton Thiel, Mega Beatman True Blue Reviews, Ryan Hanley, The Game Jamie, and last but not least, sorry for stumbling over so many of those, Zombie Joe. Thank you all so much for watching. It means the world to us that you're here to support us. We will be heading off to our patron exclusive post show again, patreon.com/GVGaming. If you want to know how to get in on that. But otherwise we will see you next time for episode 90 of the GVG cast. And until next time, folks, good night and good vibes. Bye everyone.
Bye.